And we are back for another episode of your favorite podcast, The Grandstand. It's Drive to Serve 5 season. I'm with my boy, P Money. What's going on? It's F Knowles. It's F Knowles, first of all.
Introduce yourself, my friend.
Hosting this week's episode with my boy, P Money. What's good, dude?
Man, I am recovering from my latest Netflix binge. It's been a lot of screen time. I think my phone's calling me out on it.
Oh man, dude, it kind of feels like a hangover, honestly. It's like, why? This is always the problem though with Drive to Survive, right? Like, they release all episodes a week before the first race of the season, and it's very difficult.
And right after testing too, there's no transition. Like, we're getting all hyped up about testing, and then we got to go back in time and we got to pull out an episode. It's like, well, give us a little 2 days extra, please.
Yeah, it's a little strange to go from testing straight into Drive to Survive. Like, oh, now we have to go live in the past and relive Max's season that he won and dominated. Like Lewis said in Drive to Survive, which we'll get to, I don't want to see this season again. well, he said that about his car from last season, but
yeah.
I'm ready to move on. Last season was exciting. We have a lot to talk about Drive to Survive. I was impressed, man. So we'll get into it. I was really impressed with this season, but let's get into it. Let's roll that sweet, sweet intro.
Roll it.
Boundary, it's James.
Stay out. I am stupid.
Bring back the fucking V12s.
You're too old to have driven here, really. Shame you wasn't fast enough to get to Formula One.
All the time you have to leave us, mate.
Fuck them all.
More ladies in the paddock. There's too many dudes in the paddock.
Yes! Whew! Man, dude, that gets me going.
Yeah, we've done a good job this year.
My engines. Man, we had Drive to Survive. Again, it's you have to binge it.
And how did you watch it? Yeah, did you do a full like one day?
I started watching it on Friday. I watched two more episodes. I watched four episodes on Friday. I watched two episodes on Saturday.
Oh, nice.
And then I finished yesterday. And interesting that it was very interesting to me though, the way that they opened the season. And
with Aston,
they focused heavily on Aston Martin in the first episode. And throughout a little bit, I mean, they humanized Lawrence Stroll a lot more than I think he has been in the past.
Yes. Yeah.
To a certain degree. I mean, he still seems like a ruthless motherfucker, but
did you believe him when he talked about his son saying, "Oh, Lance is my son first and then a driver."
No, I'm like, I was like, "Dude, you don't even believe that. Give me a break. There's no way."
You're fired, Lance.
Yeah. Like, no, I mean, sure. I think he was genuine. But I will say, like, I have to give props to Lance. I totally forgot that he came back from that, had a really rough practice, and then ended up putting it in the points in that first race after breaking both hands. And fucking Lando calls him out. There was a meme going around. Lando's like, can you wank yet? And there's a meme going around where it's like the Ben Affleck smoking a cigarette. You know, I don't know if you've seen that, but like when Ben Affleck got caught by the paparazzi smoking a cigarette, it just looks absolutely dejected. And it's like Lando saying, "Can you wank yet?" And over the photo of Ben Affleck is McLaren PR. Like, are you fucking?
Did you see? I love Carlos's response. He's like, if he can drive an F1 car, he could wank.
Who knows, dude? Lance is probably stroking him out pretty often.
Oh my god!
No, I'm just kidding. He probably gets laid. I guess he's a Formula One driver.
I mean, if you're not, then you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, or you should just get out of the sport. Like Latifi probably wasn't getting laid. His compatriot.
I don't know. Just Google Latifi's girlfriend. I think that guy did pretty okay for himself.
Oh yeah, that's right. She's pretty attractive. Anyway,
yeah.
Aston Martin, really fascinating story with them. We joked a lot last season about how Fernando made that claim after Canada that you're going to see an Aston Martin on the podium the rest of the season, and they didn't get on the podium again after he claimed that. So I thought it was a smart way to set up the rest of the season, because what it did for me was showed how teams can work in the off season to improve their position. And I think throughout, what they did a really good job at this year, better than any season before, is that they really followed the storylines that existed within the teams themselves rather than focusing on headlines in the press.
Or following the championship in a chronological order, which works for 21, but this year was not the way to do it anyway, because Max just ran away with it.
I think this season was one of the best, if not the best season of Drive to Survive so far. It went to show how much drama there actually was last season within each of the teams. And though Max ran away with it, there were tons of storylines that evolved throughout the season. And early on, there was one that really struck me, where Lewis talks about he wants to reclaim his eighth title. And said multiple times throughout the series, or this season of Drive to Survive, how that title was taken from him.
Yeah,
in 2021. And
episode 6, I think.
He never really says that publicly, but when we see it on camera, like, it's obvious that the dude is thinking about this all the time.
Oh, and he's obsessed with it. Yeah.
I mean, there's no
in a good way. Yeah.
I mean, I think it just goes to demonstrate, you know, Lewis's desire to win. And I think, I mean, let's just get into Merck real quick. Things were not well at Merck last season. And I think it says more about what's happening this year. What happened with Ferrari that we all know,
Remind us.
Well, last year there were rumors that he was going to sign with Ferrari, and he dismissed them. Ferrari dismissed them. Merck dismissed them. I mean, there was a point in, I think, one of the Merck episodes where Toto and Toto's basically like, we have a very transparent relationship, and if you talk with anyone, you have to tell us. And clearly that didn't happen in this case with Lewis. And
maybe it did. Maybe they were transparent. But you know what I loved about that episode is that I think I called it, and you didn't like what I did last year, the fall of Merck, and that confirms a lot of thoughts I had on Merck. Well, things were not going well inside the team, and there was a lot of doubt. And, you know, they say in the episode, there's no rumor. I think it was Will Buxton, you know, there's no rumors unfounded. And it's kind of nuts, that whole negotiation, knowing what we know now, and to see the Lewis signing again, and, you know, George saying, oh, if Lewis leaves, like, it's going to put Merck on the back foot, because it looks like he's lost faith. And that's exactly what I see looking at all these images now. It's that Lewis called it. He went to Merck, and now I think he's calling it again. And I respect him more off track after seeing that, because he has an eye for things. You know, he knew what was wrong with the car, even though Merck told him that he was wrong.
I mean, they were kind of gaslighting him in some ways.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it's funny too because it did the juxtaposition of Fernando and Lewis. Like how they've managed their careers. We saw a very vulnerable side of Toto, an emotional side of Toto that we don't quite often see. But it was pretty eye-opening to demonstrate, like, he has a lot of doubt and isn't as confident as I would ever think. We kind of came out in an earlier season in that whole, like, argument that he got in with Christian, when Christian's like, then change your fucking car. You know, remember that?
Oh, amazing sequence.
That whole sequence. and that's kind of where we saw that side of Toto, that when he's not in a position of confidence or a position of power, like they had been when they were dominating, it was very fascinating to watch and eye opening. And I think for fans of Merck, it really says like this team is struggling to find answers, culminating in Lewis leaving.
Yeah, it's always tough when a team just stops winning. And I like that they showed that side behind the scenes of them trying to get back and the doubts and the motivation that's still there. But it's and to show how hard it is to win, even if you've done it 8 times in a row. So I thought it was really telling when we saw Lewis go through his doubts and when Mercedes basically told him to stay in his lane. Well, in fact, he was right the whole time. And the scene where Toto is speaking to his wife, Susie, about cycles of domination and him not believing that we're in a Red Bull cycle right now. And he's like, we must break it. It just looked like he was in total denial. And to your point, I think the pressure is really, really, really high at his level. But also, I feel like there's a part of him that's just not accepting the fact that they've ended their cycle of domination and it's going to be really hard to win. And in F1, as like that first episode shows with Aston Martin, it takes a long time to build a team to win, and Merck might have to wait a longer time before they get back on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the interesting things too, though, about what Toto said, it felt like a little bit of a contradiction, but I do agree with the premise of it, is that, you know, these cycles of domination are very, I feel, pretty unique to Formula One. The sport is trying to figure out a way to not have that anymore, but clearly it's not working, because all we've seen now since Mercedes' domination was ended by Red Bull is now Red Bull's dominating. So, and we do have these cycles, but it's, and maybe it's just intrinsic to the sport. Maybe it's just intrinsic to Adrian Newey. I don't know. he's like, oh, all right, I'm just going to fuck up everyone during this period. These regs suit my design capabilities. Pretty fascinating to watch. Another team that I didn't realize was going to get so much of the spotlight, but got almost 2 fully dedicated episodes to them, mm-hmm. is Alpine. And holy shit. we knew that there was a lot of bad things happening behind the scenes at Alpine, but what, I mean, dude, that was like a 5-alarm, like, building fire, not a dumpster fire at Alpine. Wow.
Yeah, I remember calling Alpine the French Revolution in our preseason chat last year. And yeah, it's kind of what it was. Heads got chopped off.
I mean, guillotines were out, man. Yeah. I mean, the other thing too is the juxtaposition of Ocon and Gasly too, which that was really shocking to watch. And I have to say, I've been pretty indifferent on Esteban Ocon, but he just seems like kind of a weaseling, conniving dude. And like, he just always has a smug look on his face. I understand, like, he's a very motivated driver. He wants to win. But I also think he's one of those dudes that, you know, he would call someone a bitch and then not back it up afterwards.
You know? Yeah. So, when they referred to their feud, it seemed like Gasly was over it, but it didn't seem like Ocon was.
Oh, and no. Esteban seems like he holds on to grudges, man.
And also, it didn't seem like such a big deal. I thought it was going to be something bigger.
No, I think, listen, I don't want to focus too much on that, because I think overall they might have increased the drama between the two drivers a little bit more for the narrative's sake. Mm. I think the bigger story, though, was how Alpine was managed last year.
Yeah, that was a huge storyline. And yeah, we saw a lot of the behind the scenes of that, which was fascinating. And I think you have some thoughts on the whole Otmar getting sacked.
I mean, I think Alpine had completely unrealistic expectations for what their season should have looked like last year. That's the first thing. Mm. I also think Otmar did a terrible job at managing the pressure and the issues between the drivers.
Yes.
It was like rah-rah, let's go team. You know, we're just having bad luck. It's like, no, actually, like, what you need to do, especially after the incident where Esteban and Pierre basically knocked themselves out of the points contention 2 laps before race ends, you need to sit those motherfuckers down and basically tell them, if you do that again, your seat is under threat and we will kick you off this team. And, or, you know, just there needs to be something where you're managing these guys in a little bit more of a, like, there needs to be a slap on the wrist, or they're not a slap on the wrist. There needs to be consequences for that.
Yeah. A conversation. Yeah.
Right. And you know, what's interesting is you see in contrast, Fred Vasseur did the same thing with Charles and Carlos, though it didn't get to the same level. He sat them down and had a conversation that was like, hey guys, like, we need to be better. And
which is great.
And guess what happened? They end up getting a double points finish and Carlos wins a race. And, you know, I think Alpine didn't help Otmar, but Otmar didn't help himself either in the end. But then to fire someone on a race weekend, I mean, it lit a fire under the driver's ass because they got a podium finish, the two of them. But I still think Otmar did not help himself whatsoever. And then for him to get, and then he has the conversation with, what's his name? The now new team boss,
Bruno Famin.
Yeah. Bruno Famin.
That was awkward.
And he goes, oh, c'est la vie. You know, what a French response.
Yeah. But also, okay. So my thoughts on Otmar, I think I agree with everything you said. He didn't manage the driver relationship well. He also was not given enough time. I think Otmar was always going to be just, a temporary solution for Alpine, and that they really needed to get everyone out. I think I still stand by going out and criticizing your team, Laurent Rossi, like how he did in Canal Plus is professionally unacceptable. And the way they fired Otmar is also not the nicest way of doing it. And I think they could have been better. And also, they don't talk about this, but Alain Permain, who's been there throughout all the Schumi years, Alonso years, he also got the boot. Maybe they just needed to change everything. But Driver Survive made it look like that led to the podiums, but the first podium was already done before, and the second podium in Zandvoort was the first race after summer break, right, which was also very lucky with, you know, rain. So it's not a consequence of Otmar, you know, leaving that they got the podium. So
no, you're
that's
right.
Where that's they stretch true. It a that's bit. True. So, but hey, it seems like it's working. But Bruno Famin, when he did his whole speech in front of the factory, I was like, oh my god. The most awkward speech I've ever seen. He's reading his paper. Thick accent. He's like, yes, let's all be together. And I was like, man, that is not a leader. But it turns out that he got the two drivers together and probably ended up having a better team harmony. So I guess he's right in the end. So let's see.
It's more of the cutthroat leader that they needed, that they kind of need now. Otmar was just too nice, man. That's how I look at it. Like, I genuinely think he was too nice.
That's not how he's portrayed, for sure. Yeah.
But you know, I think he's done a great job in Formula One. He's had an incredible career. I just think all the cards were stacked against him, and then his management style just did not suit that team in that moment. So,
yeah.
But anyway, somebody whose job was on the line last year was Zach Brown, and I did not realize that. I mean, they're doing really. I think McLaren has globally done really well under his leadership, but Formula One is a pinnacle of motorsport, and that's really what matters to that team in the end. And, you know, they were not performing in the first half of the season, but he did set expectations really well. And guess what? It worked for him. And I mean, I would say his job was on the line and he delivered, and people were critical of him saying, well, he's being too pessimistic. You know, he's not being optimistic enough. And then sure as shit, McLaren is fighting for P4 when they were like P9 in the beginning of the season.
Mm-hmm. Also, I like how we saw the behind the scenes of sponsors putting huge pressure on him. And of how much Lando was doubting McLaren also. Because you remember, there's a lot of rumors last year about him looking, you know, maybe Red Bull, whatever. I just love those behind the scenes. And you can tell that some of those conversations are not scripted, but they're like kind of, okay, hey, go golf and we'll have the cameras there. It's not like a fluke that Netflix was there. It was kind of orchestrated, but it still works. Like, the dynamic is still good and it works for the storyline and the storytelling. So I love those moments, like Lando and George on a private jet and him, you know, being pensive. You can tell those moments are real. And yeah, that's one of the things. And if you follow F1 and you see those behind the scenes, like, it gives you those, you know, what we call the rumors, like, well, those are actually moments happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, yeah, you brought up the Will Buxton line where, you know, he's like, there's some truth to all the rumors you hear. And I thought he was also really great giving context to everything that was happening on screen. I mean, McLaren really, I thought they did a great job of showing just the kind of pressure that Zach was under. The sponsor thing was fascinating. Mm-hmm. I thought, like, just overall with the series, the access they got to some pretty critical moments was incredible. Mm-hmm. And so to have footage of a conversation like that is, I mean, both of us work in production and have done documentary work, and that's not easy to get. So incredible to see that conversation. A lot of focus on the team bosses, though, and another team boss is everybody's kind of favorite team boss, Gunther Steiner, and the focus on Haas.
Not mine.
excuse me. I think yours is probably Fred.
Well, if I'm being biased, yes. But actually, my favorite right now is James Vowles, which we'll get to.
Yeah. I don't have too much to say on the Haas thing other than the story that Drive to Survive painted or made very clear. I mean, Gunther wasn't getting results, but yet there's still this love and admiration for him, obviously because of Drive to Survive and his, you know, foul mouth.
an accent, let's be real.
An accent, yeah, like the accent, the whole package.
He's a funny guy.
He's really funny guy.
He's not a good team principal.
I just think we saw why Gunther got the axe. And I think, you know, we've been pretty critical of Gene Haas and his desire to actually, you know, perform in Formula One. I think he made the right call in moving on from Gunther.
If I may just add one thing on the whole Haas thing, it seems like every year is the same fucking episode. You get the whole Gunther being like, oh, I'm sick of this fucking shit, this.
It's, and like, then you're the boss, bro.
He's like, why?
The boss stops with you.
Exactly. They kept saying that, but you didn't do shit about it. And you were telling other people, I don't believe what you're saying. And it always ends up with a mysterious conversation with Gunther and Gene Haas, which we never see. It's like you just see like this B-roll of like the garage of Haas and Gunther being like, I don't know what to say. We fucked up again. We look like fucking wankers. I'm like, this looks like episode one from season one. Like, what's changed? Nothing. How has he been in here for so long? I don't know. I think he's been exposed a bit, and I'm kind of over it, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, he became more of a star. Like, he was more of a star off track than he was on track, and that doesn't, like, in Formula One, results are all that matter in the end. And he wasn't bringing the results. So, yeah. I really like the dude. I think he'd be a great pundit, honestly.
Yeah, agreed.
I think he should be. I hope Formula One or one of the networks brings him in for a few races this year. I think after watching those episodes or watching this season, it made it very clear that he just wasn't the right guy anymore for Haas. But
I did enjoy those moments of him and Binotto in the vineyards.
So good.
Very, very good bromance there. Yeah.
And Binotto, like, you got to love the guy. Like, he seems like just a genuinely nice guy. And also his time away from Formula One has just made it. It's very clear. He's like, it's such a rat race in a way.
Yes. Absolutely.
You know, it's like, yeah. He's living a completely different life and he seems much happier. So good for him.
Yeah. I've called it multiple times. He'll be back, Binotto. We'll see. You'll see.
We'll see. We know what happened with Nyck de Vries, and wow. I mean, they did not do him any favors. The AlphaTauri saga was pretty incredible to watch.
Probably the best storyline of this year, to be honest.
Wild to think, you know, and it was eye-opening to hear Liam Lawson talk about, you know, he's never really spent any time in a Formula One car when Danny Ric was brought in after Nyck de Vries got the axe, and Danny Ric broke his hand in practice.
Which in itself is wild.
Just the whole thing is crazy. It's like you bring Danny Ric back. He clearly knows this is his pathway to getting back at the Red Bull seat, which he made super clear. It was like he didn't shy away from it. He's like, I realized that I really enjoyed Red Bull and I made a mistake, is basically what he said.
He's coming home, basically, and you can tell he was happy. And I love that storyline because there's so many layers to it. There's the Danny Ric coming back, breaking his hand, being replaced, feeling doubts because this rookie is performing at an unreal level. And then Yuki
scored points in his first race. Yeah,
Yuki feeling the heat as well. That was really interesting to see that, of how heated things got between him and Lawson. And then you know, the team announcing that they're maintaining Danny Rick and Yuki for the following year, and to see how crushed Lawson is from not getting the drive. And it's not because of his performance, but it also is because it's just sometimes it's timing, and also he doesn't have the experience yet. So it was beautiful to see the human side of his family going to the race and experiencing yeah. that, and then crushing to see him sulk, be like, fuck, like I gotta hang out with these guys and when I know that I'm not driving next year.
Yeah,
it sucks, to go from dude. Being the rookie of like, hey guys, like being nervous around Alonso to like, fuck, I need that drive. It's like the confidence built up so quickly for Lawson, which is yeah, cool
man.
To see.
He caught the bug. He was like, man, I can do this. And we'll get into it, I think, in our next episode, just about predictions and what we think about the year ahead. But I
teaser
just yeah tune in. Liam Lawson to me deserves a seat in Formula One. That was an incredible. I think Yuki's probably
hands down. Yeah,
Yuki's gonna be feeling the pressure this coming season, especially with Danny Rick back. And honestly, time will tell with Danny Rick. I mean, is he Checo's also under pressure with his seat? The 2024 is going to be fascinating after watching what's happening at AlphaTauri. Like, there are just so many moving pieces at behind the Red Bull machine. It is it's wild.
That's the
man.
One thing I missed in this Driver Survive whole AlphaTauri / Red Bull driver saga is that they didn't really highlight how much pressure Checo was under. But I do like how they highlighted how much effort Danny Rick is putting in, and I love that it's no longer just like, oh hey, I'm Danny Rick and you know I'm smiling, but it's like showing how much he wants it. And yeah. I loved when Albon was in the car with Sargeant and he was yeah. calling, he's like, look at this, it's gonna be him, and it's like, I'm the honey badger, I'm fucking back, and it's exactly
it's exactly what happened. It's wild. I mean, maybe they cut it that way because of Alex doing it, but like, I mean, it literally happened. It seemed to happen exactly that way.
It was very natural the way Albon described it. That's for sure. That's what I loved, like that whole banter. Yeah.
I mean, hilarious. I was dying laughing. I was like, wow, Alex really knows Red Bull pretty well.
Yeah. I was also dying when I saw Lawson, like the Lawson banter with Yuki, when he's like, oh, what would you do if I did that? And Yuki was like, I'd put you on the ground. I was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah. All right, Yuki. You're not putting anyone on the ground, bro. You're like 5'2".
Yeah, it could be. I could see Yuki be like a good wrestler. He's like really low to the ground.
Yeah, true. He's got good center of gravity. Well, listen, time will tell with Danny Rick. I thought time will tell with Fred Vasseur, but I think he is the right man for the job at Ferrari. And if you didn't love Fred Vasseur before this season of Drive to Survive, you have to love him now, because that dude is just, he's jolly. He gets shit done when it needs to get done. Mm-hmm. I loved that the perspective that they took about Ferrari fans doubting whether Fred Vasseur was fit for the job because of where he came from with Sauber and Alfa Romeo. And but
not speaking Italian. Also
not speaking Italian, like just heavy French accent. but then also demonstrating just how vital he has been to the careers of, I mean, almost half the drivers are currently on the grid.
Yeah, and we'll know, you'll see next year of how instrumental he was in bringing Lewis to Ferrari. So for me, I mean, he's the right person. Renault fired him back in the day when it was his first experience as team principal, and which is now Alpine, just to show you all the bad decisions they made. But anyway, I'm happy he's at Ferrari, and I'm happy of how he's dealing with things, and I can't wait to see what comes.
Yeah, man, next. I was going to say, like, after watching that episode, do you feel like he's the guy to bring glory back to Maranello?
Man, as soon as we signed him last year, I knew it was going to be better. I didn't know how good he would be, because Italy could be ruthless with team principals for Ferrari. But how he delivered that win in Singapore, I think for me, he's proven. And, you know, the last time Ferrari had a domination cycle was another Frenchman. So I'm like, hey, maybe it could be that next lucky charm.
Well, you mentioned something just about how brutal Italians can be with Ferrari, but Will Buxton said, he's like, in Italy, there's a Catholic church and there's Ferrari. I thought that was the perfect juxtaposition of just how powerful and meaningful Ferrari is in the country of Italy. Yeah,
it's 100%. And, you know, in Maranello, when they win, the church will you know, chime the bells and everything for Ferrari. I mean, it is a religion. It's ridiculous.
I know. It's awesome. It's crazy, man. One of the only, I mean, I was at Monza a few years ago and just people are fucking crazy for Ferrari. But speaking of another sort of Italian team, I make this one real quick. It is mind-blowing to me how Sauber, Alfa Romeo, now Stake F1, Kick Sauber F1, whatever the fuck their name is.
soon to be Audi, maybe, or not.
Soon to be Audi, we're not sure. Figure it out, guys. I mean, we barely heard from Guanyu Zhou. We barely heard from Valtteri. I think we heard from Valtteri like twice.
Yeah,
it's incredible how they just maintain. We saw that, which I thought they were gonna talk about more. But there's really nothing to say about that team. And before we did this episode, I was watching Julian Palmer's analysis of testing, and he had about 10 seconds to say anything about this team. Just like, he's like, yeah, I don't have much to say about them. I think they're going to do kind of what they've done every season, you know, low fuel runs and testing to kind of tell everyone that they've got pace, and then they don't perform in race. And that is just how they're Haas somehow makes it more interesting to be a backmarker than Stake for this team.
Yeah.
So
I don't know.
That's what they truly own the role of being F1's forgotten team.
Yeah, I have nothing to add to that. It's
all right. Great. Let's move on. One other thing I did note is that we didn't see Christian Horner was featured a lot, but more from a perspective, not as Red Bull team boss, but as, I mean, he was featured a lot in the AlphaTauri episode.
More for AlphaTauri.
More for AlphaTauri. And it also demonstrated just how much they're involved in the AlphaTauri team, right? Like, yeah. Christian's, like, Franz Tost was the team principal, but it's really Christian and Helmut making the call.
By the way, I love when we saw Danny Rick going to Silverstone when they tested and everything. And
yeah, that was very cool.
When they made that call, I love how Christian's sitting at the table and he's the one saying, yeah, I think we're going to put him back in the car. And the AlphaTauri team principal is just like, yeah, I agree. It's like, yeah, well, the decision's already been made, bro.
Yeah, cool. Glad you agree. Yeah. Don't care.
Otherwise, you're going to be fired too. So yeah, you can join Nick DeVries where the fuck he is. Oh my God,
dude. Probably wallowing in a self-pity somewhere.
Or cleaning his windows.
Oh my God. he's a nice dude too. I don't want to bash him. I feel bad for
it's
him.
It's just funny.
The fact that Lawson performed as well as he did in that car just says like DeVries just didn't have what it took for that team.
Also, I think that was a bit skewed. I said it all through last year. AlphaTauri in the first half of the year was a shitbox of a car.
That was a really bad.
Danny Rick and Lawson got the car when Red Bull basically got his, you know,
started giving them their spare parts.
Yeah, they started saying like, listen, we cannot be first and last. That's not a good look for us. And then all of a sudden they're getting big points. So,
right.
Got a feel for Nick DeVries because they didn't cover the fact that they were not getting anything in the first half of the season. But hey, yeah.
But it's interesting though, because we didn't see a lot from the Red Bull side, which I think might have been intentional because there was so much domination. But I also wonder, I mean, Max has made it very clear he doesn't want to participate in this. We barely heard from him other than, did he even feature in any sit-down interviews? I don't think he did.
I think he did, but it's...
I barely remember, and I just watched it.
It's a lot.
Also, when he was playing squash, he looks like the most unathletic person.
Bro.
Early pickleball.
Yeah.
I just... They must still be salty with the Drive to Survive producers, but that didn't... If they featured him, that was the funniest thing to watch. He cannot play other sports for the fucking life of him, bro.
Right, man. I'll tell you what, I can kick the shit out of Max Verstappen at tennis, that's for sure. Like, I saw that forehand.
Love to see it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And I would hit him if he came to the net, just saying.
Sit down, pussy. he'd probably throw his racket and have a tantrum and walk off. But
probably.
Yeah, it did feel like... maybe not the full Red Bull team, because they did give a lot of access around AlphaTauri, but I think, you know, we didn't hear a lot from Max. We didn't hear a lot from Checo. I think Red Bull just, yeah, they made a choice not to participate as much as some of the other teams. But somebody we did see who was brought back was Claire Williams, which I loved. I really appreciated hearing her perspective, and even Danica Patrick, who there's been, you know, kind of feels weird that you'd have an IndyCar driver / NASCAR driver commenting on F1, but you know, she is a former race car driver, has seen success.
She's a pundit.
Yeah, she's a pundit now.
That's how I see her.
Yeah, for sure. But I think I just wanted to mention her. I thought she did pretty well. But Claire Williams, just having her perspective was incredible through this series. And I thought it brought a level of professionalism and a perspective that she wouldn't have been able to give previously as a team boss.
Obviously it's good to have more female interviewees as well, but they were both brought on for their experience and their expertise. And Claire has a really good story to tell, because she was part of the backmarker years of Williams, so she knows the struggle. And her commentary on Haas and backmarking teams were amazing. And she's so eloquent. I mean, we need her more. And I know one person is really happy. Our boy Costa, like he's
a strange crush on her. Yeah.
I do want to say just a few random notes. Was that I loved because I talk about this a lot, the importance of data, how much they talk about how it's a data-driven sport. And no matter where the driver...
Of course you would say that.
Yeah, of course. Especially that the James Vowles episode where I could tell, I mean, he's a bit on the spectrum, it seems. And I love that about him, how, you know, nerdy he is, and definitely want to see more of that. But no matter where a driver is from, they all know... how to say "for fuck's sake."
And every single driver.
Yuki to Gasly to Ocon to Leclerc. They all say it, except for the British drivers, I think.
Yeah, they're like the most... George like rarely swears. Lewis doesn't really swear all that often. Yuki's definitely the most foul-mouthed of all the drivers.
100%.
But yeah, that's a funny... another thing too, they didn't use as much of the fake narration, like the fake broadcast voice. They use a lot more team radio, and they use a lot more of the F1 and Sky Sports broadcast.
They did have the main commentary was like a written script, but it wasn't as obvious as previous years. So, yeah. I think there's one thing I want to bring up when you're talking about Christian Horner, which is I found it really funny that they added that clip where he's celebrating Christmas with his kids.
Oh, the Santa Claus thing? That was so weird.
Santa Claus asks his kids, "Has Daddy been good this year?" Oh, man. That's going to be a meme soon, I think. Sorry.
I didn't even think about that, dude.
It was so awkward. It's like, "Has your father been good this year?" It's like, "Well, I don't know. Let's see what their investigation says."
Next year, there's going to be a little bit of an investigation into Daddy. Oh, man. That's a really good point. But, man, I really enjoyed this season. It's tough to do, you know, just in a weekend. But I would argue that this is the best season of Drive to Survive.
I think so.
From a storytelling perspective, yeah. I think that it felt like they brought on producers to do a lot more fact checking and to write the story, to focus much more on what's happening with the teams themselves rather than what's happening outside of, or just like in the rumor mill, in the headlines, et cetera. I really enjoyed that. And it just felt like, it felt like they were given more access. Like somebody, they brought in a new producer or something. And they're like, "If you guys don't want us to create narratives ourselves, we need you to give us more access to tell the best story we can tell." And they did that. And I thought it was, you know, even the access to Merck as an example, really showed that, right? We saw them do it, you know, in the preseason stuff with Lewis when they were filming for Mercedes. And, you know, I really applaud these guys, the team, the production team for what they did this year. It was a big step forward.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But yeah, man. Anyway, I'm so done with last season.
Now let's move on.
I'm so tired of talking about it.
In about 3 days, we're at P1 in Bahrain. So 2024.
That's right. We're going to be releasing our season preview with our preview of what's to come, what's going to happen this weekend in Bahrain. But in the meantime, make sure to follow us at the Grandstand F1 on Twitter and on Instagram. And if you're not already, follow us anywhere. Podcasts are available. Till the next one from my boy P Money, it's F Knowles. We'll see you next time.